Baton Rouge, Falcon Heights, and Dallas. The names of those communities have taken on new meaning in recent weeks in the wake of officer-involved shootings of Black men and direct attacks on police officers. I'm Anne Hillman. Today on Talk of Alaska, we'll be discussing the relationships between law enforcement and communities of color in Alaska. How do we build and maintain positive relationships and prevent similar tragedies here? That's the topic today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
The United States is still reeling after the shooting deaths of Philando Castile at a traffic stop in Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and Alton Sterling outside a convenience store in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Those deaths were followed by protests around the nation, then two attacks on police. A sniper killed five officers in Dallas, and another shooter killed three more in Baton Rouge. People around the nation are calling for meaningful conversations about the relationships between law enforcement and communities of color. Today, we'll talk about those relationships in Alaska. My guests are Anchorage Police Department Lieutenant Denise Rollins, who heads the new Community Relations Unit, Alaska State Trooper Colonel Jim Cockrell, and community activist and one of the local organizers of the Black Lives Matter movement, Jasmine Smith. Thank you all very much for being here. How do you feel about the relationship between law enforcement and your community? Let us know by calling 1-800-478-TALK or 550-8422 if you're here in Anchorage. You can also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Again, thank you all very, very much for being here. Lieutenant Rollins, you're heading up the Anchorage Police Department's new Community Relations Unit. What exactly does that unit do?
Currently, the unit is, I am the only person in the unit, and it's a brand new unit, and it's as a result of not anything negative that's happened, but more like insight into the future, you know, not necessarily doing something as a result of something happening, but more so just building on the designed to build on the positive relationships that the Anchorage Police Department already currently has.
So it's really a proactive move.
It is. The right now, when it initially became a new position, it was set to foster the relationships that the police department already has with some nonprofit organizations,
great,
such as Dollars for Dogs and the Citizens Academy Alumni Association, the chaplains, etc., that directly support the police department. So my position is the contact person, the go-to person for those organizations that currently work with the police department. And then for future, any other organizations that would, from the community, that would directly impact the police department.
Oh, that's really great. What inspired you to apply for this position and be part of this new unit?
Well, I recently got promoted. So as of the 4th of July was my promotion date. And as being a brand new lieutenant, my command staff decided that that would be a good fit for me based on my previous experience with the school district for the last 13 years and being the liaison between the school district and the police department.
Great. And I will definitely like to learn a bit more about that later on. Colonel Cockrell, the Alaska State Troopers are the only law enforcement agency in most of Alaska. So when we talk about community policing, what does that mean to you?
Well, basically, I think the Alaska State Troopers has a long history of providing community policing throughout the state because we are responsible from our posts all the way from Prince Wales Island down southeast all the way to Kotzebue and out in Fairbanks and all the villages that intertwine in those areas. And one of the things that we have focused on for over 20 years is our interactions with the smaller communities that we police out of our hub areas, like out of Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, and focus our troopers to do meaningful visits to the villages that aren't totally law enforcement. So we have a village visit program where our troopers go in. A lot of times we require them to RON, spend a night usually at the schools, and interact with the community, not in a strictly law enforcement agency, not like we're running there to arrest somebody or doing a sexual assault investigation, but do more proactive community orientation policing, get involved in the schools. We're really involved in the schools. Every time we do a community visit, we pretty much require our troopers to stop in the schools and mm-hmm. interact with the kids. It's one of the things that you notice in when we go to the smaller communities is how the children flock to the troopers when they come in. And what we do find out, because we assign our troopers to like four villages, whatever, how many troopers we have, so they have specific ones. That way we get a lot better information because most of those areas are somewhat close-knit, and until we build that trust and that relationship, they're not going to provide the information we need to get the people who are preying on some of the villagers. And so mm-hmm. it's been real effective for us. Mm-hmm. We track all the village visits our troopers do. We put it in their evaluations. When we have new troopers go out to the village or out to our hub areas like Bethel, we have a mentorship, have some training on top of what they've already received for the academy.
Great. So I'd like to talk about that more in depth later, too.
For the troopers, we have, like I say, it's kind of within our culture, our tradition to provide, you know, those law enforcement services, but more importantly, try to interact positively with the communities, go to potlatches, go to community carnivals, or events that's going on, mm-hmm. we'll fly our troopers in.
Okay, and they go to the event center just kind of making themselves available for anybody to ask any questions or learn more about them as people?
Absolutely, and like I say, when we do RON or spend a night in the villages, we normally, since they don't have hotels or anything, we normally they sleep in the gym, so a lot of those schools are open. The gyms are open almost all night mm-hmm. for them to play basketball and stuff. So there are troopers involved there, and again, that's really important for what we do as an agency.
And you keep saying RON, RIN?
I'm spending a night, remain overnight.
Overnight, yeah. Okay.
All right. Sorry about that.
No, I understand. It's so easy to fall into acronyms when you're talking about something that you know about and that you're passionate about. Ms. Smith, you are helping organize a local chapter of the Black Lives Matter movement. Can you tell me, first, a little bit of history about what that organization is, and then why did you feel like it was an important thing to start here in Anchorage?
Well, first and foremost, I'd say it's actually a pretty good-sized group that's all working collectively to establish an official chapter. So that's in the works right now at the national office. There's a team that's kind of working on making sure that's set up correctly, and that way there's objectives and goals and plans to move forward that, you know, is customized to what we have going on in Alaska, but also in line with national rules and policies. I think the shortened history of Black Lives Matter is it started in July 2013, and it was in response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman in the Trayvon Martin case in Florida. And from there, I think national larger attention kind of happened in 2014, like with Eric Gardner's death. So since then, I think the thing people see the most when they think of Black Lives Matter is speaking out against violence from police towards African Americans. But it also does address racial profiling. It dives into, you know, some of those racial tensions right now within our community. I think it's never an easy conversation to have. I think when you say Black Lives Matter or you hear that, you know, it's natural for some folks to just kind of tense up and say, oh, it's the elephant in the room. However, you know, it is something important that has to be addressed. It is focusing on, you know, the needs of what's going on in the Black community. And it's just rallying and coming together and just saying enough is enough of the violence. We've got to be proactive and say something and speak up and shed light on what's going on and, you know, put some real names and stories behind some of the victims.
Why do you feel like that's an important thing to start in Anchorage right now?
Well, you kind of have two sides of that discussion, and we've had that discussion plenty of times. I mean, on one front, you have individuals that say, it's not really an issue here, so why are we even discussing it in Alaska? You know, we're okay, you know. And then you have others that are up here, and they might not be as vocal as some other individuals, and they might say, you know, it's an important discussion to have, kind of like what Officer Rollins was saying earlier. It's, you know, it's preventative. You know, Alaska's lucky enough that we can see trends and things happening in other states, you know, before it gets here. Some of the folks from Alaska have family in these places. They're personally affected. There have been some folks in Alaska that have been affected. So, you know, it's important because the conversation has to start somewhere. You know, it's not at all necessarily pointing fingers up here at our law enforcement, you know, by comparison, and this is just me personally, by comparison, I do believe they are better than what other states are going through. But if we see that national trend of what's going on and we know that it affects some of the people here and there's those concerns, we have to start somewhere and have the conversation. And that's honestly where the rally idea came from. It was just saying, hey, you know, I see this happening. A few of the people that were putting it on were personally affected, and they said, let's just do something.
And you're referencing a rally that happened a little over a week ago.
About a week ago.
And 3.5 people showed up that evening. Or 3.5. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I don't know about 300.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. I think it was more than 3.5.
It was a week and a half. No, it was 300. About 300
people. So,
yeah,
Friday, July 8th, I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd love to get your reactions to this. Lieutenant Rollins, do you think it's important to have a Black Lives Matter chapter up in Anchorage? I mean, what do you think about the movement in general?
Well, I appreciate Ms. Smith's perspective on it. I appreciate her honesty and her candor in saying that the law enforcement here in Anchorage, she does not view that as what's happening in the lower 48. I think conversation is always appropriate. I think that getting ahead of a situation is more beneficial than waiting and taking a reactive response to mm-hmm. something. So I personally have been around the table with some people who are involved in the movement, and I've been at the table with folks that have invested interest in seeing Black Lives Matter move forward. And I think that at every event that I've been to, the reception of the police by the folks that are having the Black Lives Matter rally has always been positive. Mm-hmm. And I'm really grateful for that, because that tells me that they do notice there is a difference, mm-hmm. and that the policing here in Anchorage is different than what people may experience. I also recognize that people here do have relatives that are being have a different perspective, that view things differently in the states that they're in. And I just am glad that she's drawn that difference between what's happening here in Anchorage and what's happening in the lower 48. And I personally expect that our relationship between the police and the community will continue to be as strong, and the lines of communication will remain open.
Excellent. Excellent. Lieutenant Cockrell, what are your thoughts on starting Black Lives Matter in Anchorage, but then also in Alaska?
Well, first of all, the Alaska State Troopers doesn't have a huge footprint in the Anchorage area, mm-hmm. but especially as a way it started as a positive. It's much better to start it in a positive note than a negative note. And I think not only that, the interaction they have now with the local police department and the individuals involved in the movement, I think, is really important, because I think that will set the stage if there's ever anything that comes up questionable. I would like to also add that, you know, in this day and age of society, I think people devaluated people's lives. And it's not only Black lives, but it's everybody's lives that matter. And I think there's when you look at the amount of shootings that we have in Anchorage and outside, even in Trooper area, where our homicides and violent crime continues to grow, I think we also need to focus there too, because there's certainly a concern, you know, on our front, just the amount of violence that we're seeing in rural Alaska and even out of the Matsu Valley in areas.
I think that's actually a good segue to touch on. I think another area of discussion that we have quite a bit is All Lives Matter versus Black Lives Matter. And I think that's another elephant that's always in the room. So I definitely want to touch on that. And I understand that sentiment from two perspectives. I understand that all lives matter. I mean, everybody matters. Everybody has the right to live and be happy, healthy, raise a family, or whatever your life goals are. I think specifically in terms of Black Lives Matter, the best analogies that I try to give for that one and the reason, because people do ask quite a bit, well, why do you just say Black Lives? Why don't you say everyone? And I think of like maybe four analogies, like when you're on the airplane and, you know, the flight attendant's doing her safety brief and she always says, put your oxygen on yourself first and then help someone else. Because, you know, if you're not breathing at 100%, how do you aid, you know, someone else? Another analogy that I like to think about is if you are injured or there is something going on with you physically and you make the determination to go to the doctor, you know, the first thing they ask you is, why are you here today? And you tend to focus on what your chief complaint is and explaining to them what brings you in today. It doesn't mean that you don't care about the rest of your body. It just means that you're happening to come in today about a chief complaint or a specific, you know, a specific issue.
Like your leg is broken.
Right. My leg is broken. So let's focus on my leg. I'm not saying I don't want my other leg to be healthy, but that one, you know, so I think that has been another tough area, and it's always a debate, is all lives matter versus Black Lives Matter. And I think in terms of the specific Black Lives Matter movement, it was just saying, you know, right now we're within our community, we're seeing this issue in our community, we have to rally together and address what's going on within our community. You know, another thing that I always say to everyone, and I said it at the rally, if there was a, you know, Polynesian Lives Matter rally or a Native Lives Matter rally or whatever the case is, I would be there, you know, because I understand collectively we do all matter and, you know, we will get more accomplished, you know, if we're all in the same accord and work together. However, sometimes within specific communities, there are things going on that are specific to that community, that's, mm-hmm. you know, to their way of life, their culture, whatever the case is, that we have to address as well. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, just in that standpoint, it's just food for thought when discussing the all concept versus a specific group lives matter. Mm-hmm. It's not at all saying one doesn't matter. It's just saying, you know, right now, it appears that there might be issues going on more specific in one community, and let's address that, mm-hmm. you know, and go from there.
All right. Do you have thoughts on Black Lives Matter and other issues of community policing? Does Black Lives Matter have a role in Alaska? Give us a call at 1-800-478-8255, or if you're here in Anchorage, 550-8422. You can also email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. Lieutenant Rollins, you're an African-American woman who's a police officer. I was reading a Facebook post this morning by one of the officers who was killed in Baton Rouge, and he was talking about what that was like for him to be an African-American man who was also a cop and kind of being looked at in two different ways. I guess what I'd like to know is, do you feel like your identity plays a role, your ethnic identity and your identity as a law enforcement officer, does that ever feel like a conflict to you, or do you ever feel like people look at you differently because?
I can only tell you by my experience. I am a law enforcement officer by choice. Mm-hmm. I am born as an African American female. I have no choice in that, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And I don't feel a conflict because my interactions with the public has been the same as it was 22 years ago when I started in the department. I have respect for the public and the public respects me. I've never had an interaction where someone isolated me as being someone who was a threat to them as a black individual. I've never had an interaction with anybody who felt like I was a threat to them as any other ethnic or you know, individual. My role or my you know, my ability to police is the it's been consistent throughout my career, and I don't necessarily make a distinction between how I police one person versus another. I'm sensitive to everyone. I'm sensitive to the needs right now. Like she said, Ms. Smith said, if you go in for a broken leg, the concentration is on the broken leg. And if I am called to a scene where I have to respond, it is based on the behavior and not the color of the skin.
Wonderful. We have a caller. We have Jim from Wasilla on the line. Jim, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you. I've worked briefly in law enforcement, and I also was in a mixed marriage, so I have a little bit of experience from kind of both sides of this issue. But I did, but the brief time I was worked in law enforcement, I observed personalities that kind of followed the group. I understand full well what male bonding is, and you find that kind of thing going on. They call it male bonding, but in any kind of law enforcement or intense training situation, I was a firefighter and EMT. I went through the Sitka Troopers Academy. And people have a tendency to bond together and then they start following strong personalities. And some of those personalities are not necessarily on the right side of the law, even though they're in law enforcement. So I saw some actions that were not very nice. This was back in the 70s.
Oh, and that was a lot while ago.
We had drunken public laws and things like that. And I saw some abuse towards natives. And I also observed when they did start hiring women and minorities in law enforcement, take on that same persona of, them and us attitude when you're in law enforcement.
And Jim, do you feel like
to have an enemy?
And do you feel like that is your experience now, 40 years later, as well? That there's sort of an us and them, a mentality with law enforcement versus community, as opposed to law enforcement as part of and building community.
I'm saying that it's a possibility of being out there. It's not that it automatically
is
going to be. It's just the potential of being there. And I saw discrimination towards my wife by different people, and it wasn't just white people towards black. It was other races towards black. And so there's a lot of dynamics going on here, and there's no, cut and dry, black and white kind of situation. But I think that there has to be some answers as to why some of these events are taking place, and I don't hear that coming out. I don't hear any of the law enforcement saying, this is why this person shot that person. Nobody's saying anything about it. But I do know from observation that you got good cops and you got bad cops. And how do you sort through that and how do you weed them out? And that's what Black Lives Matter is asking that question. They're not coming right out and saying it in that simplicity, but that's what it's about. And how, once you hire somebody, how do you go back and rescreen them to make sure that they don't have their bad habits come out?
That's actually a great question that we can ask Colonel James Cockrell here with the Alaska Troopers. Colonel Cockrell, how do you decide if a trooper is working out, if they actually are working in favor of a community and not being biased against them, as Jim suggests? And also, how do you make sure that it's not an us versus them mentality, as Jim also suggests has definitely been present?
Okay, I think what we need to do is start from the beginning. Mm-hmm. When we hire troopers, probably no different than the Anchorage Police Department, we do an extensive screening process from a full background that takes months to complete, a polygraph, a psychological test, and then the oral board, and then they got to actually go through the selection process, and ultimately myself and my two majors end up making the final decision. From there, they go to the State Trooper Academy in Sitka for 14 weeks of training. And one of the things we've done in the last few years since I've been colonel is we've changed our training mentality from more of the warrior mindset to the guardian mindset. So what we want our troopers to do is be the guardians of the community, not the warrior. And there's a whole different mindset when you do that. So we're transitioning into that. So after they graduate from the academy, they go through about a 14-week field training officer program. Part of that, they're evaluated every day, including how they interact with the public and through the whole process. And then after they graduate from the FTO program, then they're on their own, and we still monitor them very closely.
And when you're monitoring them, are you looking for things like implicit biases towards certain groups of people or towards certain situations?
Absolutely. During the FTO program, we certainly do.
An FTO program?
A field training officer program where they're evaluated by three different FTOs and then an FTO sergeant to ensure that they meet the standards of the Alaska State Troopers. And then, from there, we also got the Office of Professional Standards. If somebody has a complaint about an Alaska State Trooper, mm-hmm. it goes to that. Doesn't come to the Alaska State Troopers. It goes to the Department of Public Safety for evaluation. And we take all citizen complaints against our troopers seriously. And mm-hmm. if it meets the criteria, we'll end up doing an administrative investigation or potentially a criminal investigation. I mean, we have 300 odd troopers in the state, right about 300. And we hold them to a very high standard. And if they fall behind that standard, we deal with them. And I guarantee you we deal with any issues. If you look at the amount of people that we contact, we generate over 100,000 cases a year as an agency. And that could be anything from a traffic accident to a homicide. And not counting our traffic citations that we write and just the amount of people that we contact, we get very few citizen complaints. I mean, we contact thousands of people, and probably no different than the Anchorage Police Department. And there's ways that they, if anybody contacts a trooper and says they had a problem with another trooper, we have a mandatory reporting. So if they see me on the street, I have to complain about an Alaska State Trooper. That has to go into what we call our blue team, and then that gets followed up by the Office of Professional Standards, and eventually, very quickly, we'll decide if it needs to be followed up. But we track all their use of force. That way, we ensure that our troopers, if we've got some trooper out there that think they're using too much force, I mean, we're mm-hmm. tracking all that, so we have red flags to intervene if it looks like we need to intervene. I'm sure no different than the Anchorage Police Department. We hold our troopers to a very high standard, and we've maintained that standard throughout the years.
Thank you. Lieutenant Rollins, is there a similar both training and follow-up within APD?
Correct. We very much like the troopers in that if an incident or complaint comes in, it's fully investigated.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jim, very much for your call. I appreciate you checking in.
Yeah, my grandson is trying to get into law enforcement and California Highway Patrol, mm-hmm. and I'm concerned. I really am concerned about his safety and his future. So anyway, that's about it.
Thank you, and I wish the best for your grandson.
Yeah.
We have another caller on the line, Elena from Manakotak. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
I just wanted to say, yes?
please go on. There's a bit of a delay, so we're overlapping.
Okay. I think the past actions of VPSOs in, rural communities, they were targeting only certain people, and they were very abusive, throwing people, slamming people down on the ground and just kicking them and really horrible stuff, even rapes in jails and making false charges. And those were reported and took a long time for regional office to change them. But the state troopers, they make a lot of false charges in Dillingham, if somebody's walking around or they go by snuggle or something, and then they used to charge them with importation and stuff. And
in Dillingham? State troopers, not the Dillingham police?
In Dillingham. And then they'd come here, and then they'd break in entering to people's homes, and especially when their parents are gone. One time I went to a meeting, they came in with mm-hmm. their guns drawn.
And Elena, are
my
these...
My house, and I have...
Are these incidences...
And it's all the negative stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, Trooper Nate was really bad at making false accusations and just going into homes and all kinds of trumped up charges and stuff. It was just, it was horrible.
And Elena, have you documented these and reported them to the state troopers? And then I'd like to give Colonel Cockrell a chance to respond.
I wrote to the judge how many times, and he told me to file charges of harassment and all that other mm-hmm. stuff. But I don't believe in the state court system because they make a lot of people don't, because they just, you know, a lot of people around here are forgiving people. But when you go to the court system, mm-hmm. the district attorney, I mean, she wants to make you out to be a monster or something, you know. It's just,
so there's a lot of distrust of the justice system in general, it sounds like, from your perspective.
Yeah.
Colonel Cockrell, how would you like to respond to Elena?
Well, there's, I think, several different issues. First of all, I would suggest if she's got complaints about particular troopers to give me a call at 907-269-5431.
And can you repeat that number again,
please? Yes, 907-269-5431. 5431 or 5631, I'm sorry. I got
okay.
And if not, then now she can call the switchboard at 5511 269-5511
okay.
and just ask for the colonel, and they'll get her phone call to me, and I'll certainly listen to them if she's got specific allegations or information. I'd like to, you know what they are.
Great. Thank you.
I know that she touched on the VPSOs, and mm-hmm. There's a couple different things. In a lot of our smaller communities, we've got TPOs, tribal police officers, that are actually managed usually by the traditional council or whatever council they have in the village.
Okay.
Or they got village police officers, which are, again, handled within the village, usually paid for by federal funds. They have limited enforcement authority that we don't really supervise. Then we got the village public safety officers, or VPSOs, which are mm-hmm. the most common, that we oversee the grant for the 10 nonprofits in the Northwest Arctic Borough. And we have approximately 70 positions. We got currently, I think we're funded at 78. We currently got 70 in our villages right now, providing general law enforcement duties there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though the VPSOs don't work for the Alaska State Troopers, they actually work for the regional areas, we do provide oversight training, and we do investigate misconduct by the VPSOs. And unfortunately, we've had to, in past years, arrest VPSOs for different type things, not usually involved in their office, but outside their job title. So we certainly look into them just like we would an Alaska State Trooper.
And I think what Elena is really touching on is just a lack of trust of law enforcement in the rural villages. You mentioned doing things like making sure troopers get out there and interact as people and learn about the communities and learn about the cultures. But what other things can be done to build trust between VPSOs and the community, between troopers and communities?
Well, first of all, Elena's from the Bristol Bay region. Manicotic's out of Dillingham. We service Manicotic out of the Dillingham area. And I think the biggest thing for us to instill trust into the smaller communities is interact, be there more, instead of just there for a law enforcement agent, or, you know, to go in and arrest somebody. And that was kind of the stigma the troopers had back in the 70s and 80s. The only time we came into the village was to arrest somebody and bring them out. And over the years, we've worked really hard to change that image of the Alaska State Troopers and provide, like I said, community outreach. And I know that we're in and out of Manicotic. I was actually in Togiak a couple weeks ago because they want to put an Alaska State Trooper in Togiak, so we're working on trying to make that happen. Because they've got, if you look at that region, that and that's one of the bigger villages in the Bristol Bay region, they certainly, with the amount of activity they got, we could certainly justify a trooper in Togiak. So not only do I encourage my troopers to be out there, also my commanders. I've got a captain going out to Shugnak tomorrow, and out of the Kotzebue area. So we try to get in, and we certainly will listen to concerns if they got specific complaints about a trooper or how our troopers are handling it, because we will we'll take the steps necessary to hopefully resolve those issues.
Great. Thank you. And thank you very much for your call, Elena. I appreciate it. We are going to take a short break, and then we will be back with more calls from listeners here on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline and its operations today and into the future.
It's summer and time to get out on the water, whether you're commercial fishing, heading to a weekend cabin, or tossing in a line to catch tonight's dinner. Having a boat means regular maintenance projects, fueling, and cleaning. Alaska Clean Harbors reminds you to minimize waste and pollution during these activities. Ask your harbor master for waste disposal information. Find more at alaskacleanharbors.org. This message sponsored by Cook Inlet Keeper with funding from the Coastal Impact Assistance Program.
Hello, you're listening to Talk of Alaska Statewide. I'm Ann Hillman, and today we're discussing the relationships between law enforcement and local communities in Alaska. My guests are Colonel James Cockrell with the Alaska State Troopers, Lieutenant Denise Rollins with the Anchorage Police Department, and Jasmine Smith with Black Lives Matter. What do you think would improve the relationship between law enforcement and the community? You can call us here in Anchorage at 550-8422 or statewide at 1-888-478-8255. And we have a call on the line. It is Jones from Sutton. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Hi.
I just wanted to say you had asked what do we as listeners think of Black Lives Matter? And I remember back when the shootings happened in Charleston Church, it was aired on television by a panel that maybe I misunderstood, but my opinion does not matter as far as telling what to do with Black lives and any situations concerning Black people, because I am not as such. I am a white person. And as Lieutenant Rollins said, she is Black, but she doesn't identify herself that way.
That's not what she said.
That's not what I said, ma'am.
Oh, no, I know that's not what you said. I'm just talking.
Okay. I guess, do you have a specific question or a specific thought on the Black Lives Matter movement?
Well, I just wanted to say, in agreement with her statement, that the way she approaches her job is just to treat all with respect, and I believe that that's the way to break down any race barrier, is to treat each and every person that we come up against with respect and grace.
And that's the idea behind the Black Lives Matter movement as well. Would you agree, Jasmine?
I think that's the long-term objective. I think the part that sometimes people miss is, you know, you have to, sometimes when these situations happen, you have to address the situation and the emotion that comes with it before you can get to that point. If we bypass the issues and the situations that's causing these feelings and these outcomes, it does nothing for, you know, the concept of just common courtesy, respect, and, you know, I guess equality in general, just because it will come off as not genuine. So I do believe that would be amazing. That would be great. And I'm sure that would be anyone's long-term objective. However, you know, right now there are just things happening that have to be addressed and acknowledged before we can really get to that point 100% and just be safe and be okay being there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And Lieutenant Rollins, would you like to add anything? All right. Thank you very much for your call. Another topic that we haven't gotten to that I really think we should is, I'd like to talk about the attacks on police officers, both first in Dallas and then in Baton Rouge. Lieutenant Rollins and Colonel Cockrell, I was wondering if you could talk about how those incidences, how those attacks have impacted your own law enforcement agencies.
I think I'll take this question first. First of all, Alaska is somewhat separate from the rest of the United States, and we always seem to be somewhat behind the the trends, I guess, of the lower 48. However, I don't know that we've really adjusted the way we're doing our policing. We certainly have asked our troopers to be more vigilant, screen their calls, screen dispatch calls a little bit more careful to ensure that we don't roll up into some type of ambush. The events that's happening in the lower 48 are just horrific when you look at it, not only for the police but for the communities that they're serving. I mean, it's certainly when you have those type of impacts, it certainly will impact the way they're policing in those communities and elsewhere. It's because it's going to fan out however they decide to respond and change up their policies and how they're going to handle complaints and stuff. So it will have a definite impact on some of the bigger police departments that are dealing with those issues. And I'm hopeful with the amount of trust that law enforcement has in Alaska that it won't creep its way up to Alaska. And as an agency, that's one of the things we need to continue to work hard. Just like you said, you know, it's upon it for our law enforcement officers to treat everybody with respect, regardless of the circumstances those people are in, and the circumstances our troopers or our other law enforcement officers are, because that's what goes a long way, is how we're, you know, how we interact with the people that we come in contact with, regardless of race, sexual, or, you know, sexual orientation or anything else. It's how we deal with the situation at the time.
Mm-hmm. And working with individuals as individuals.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Lieutenant Rollins.
Right. I agree with that. we will continue to, let me address what you asked. You asked how the loss of the police officers' lives impacted our department. Obviously, it creates you know, it's disturbing to us, but it also creates or causes us to become more vigilant, or at least try to be more aware of people who may try to harm us. But it also, like Ms. Smith mentioned with Black Lives Matter, it also, although it happened in the lower 48, there are people here who are impacted by it. We had a former employee at our department whose brother was killed in one of those attacks. So there are local people here that live right here in Anchorage and Eagle River that are directly impacted by those shootings. So we continue to just build on the great relationship that we have. You can't underestimate I can't overemphasize communication. And when the lines of communication are open, people reach out to the police department and we also reach out to the community so that we can have these conversations.
Okay. We have an email that came in, and this is actually in reference back to the previous Black Lives Matter discussion. From Sam. Sam says, I find it somewhat discouraging to hear law enforcement officials speaking in sweeping generalities about such a poignant issue in society right now. Let's face it, it's more so than ever an issue of justice rather than just one of equal treatment. Equality is when a shorter person gets the same size stepping stool as someone with longer legs. Justice, however, is when the shorter person gets the tall step to begin with. To revert back to the safe and more or less insignificant all lives matter mantra is to take away from the momentum and magnitude of the Black Lives Matter movement as a whole. Whether a community is experiencing discrimination on par with the worst area of our country or not, the conversation remains the same. And always at the crux of the issue today is police brutality and violence. I have a profound respect for any public servant who puts themselves in the line of fire for the community. I would hope that officers in general could be a little more candid about what is really happening on our streets, though. Do you feel that you are candid about what's happening?
I mean, I'm not a police officer, so I can't speak from that standpoint, you know. But I will say that that's something that we've also discussed as well, is we do, you know, need to have these conversations. But I think at some point we have to find a forum where these conversations can go a step further. And it sticks out in my mind because of something that was said earlier. You know, people should be able to have a constructive forum to talk to each other both ways, address those concerns and issues and things going on, and not fear any negative outcome or retaliation or I'm going to get in trouble. I think if we have to have these conversations like that, we're keeping it safe. And at some point we have to be real and say, look, this happened to me and I'm not happy about it. why do you guys do this? It doesn't make sense to me. I feel like when I come at you as a black man, you look scared of me when your car, when you pull up next to me. And it goes on the other side too. The police officers and the troopers, you know, they should be able to maybe say, you know what, maybe I am scared a little bit and I don't know why. Or maybe I do have to figure out what it is, or maybe I do act a certain way, you know, and I don't know what that looks like. And I think that's the bigger issue in the question. How do you facilitate that? But at some point, it's true. You know, we do kind of start having safe conversations and saying, let's be nice to each other or let's not do this. But at some point, we have to find a way to get past that and get to the substance and have some sort of an open forum where we can just say, you know, from black citizens' standpoint, this is what I feel like I'm experiencing. Why? Mm-hmm. Police officer standpoint, you might have experienced that. Let me tell you why, without fear of some negative outcome, retaliation, or whatever the case is. So that's my take on that.
Do any of you feel like that we're at a point in this community where we can have those very open conversations?
I think we're having them. I mean, yeah, I think we're having them. I've also commented on the fact that I've been around the table with people who are involved mm-hmm. in the Black Lives Matter. I think that we're making steps forward. And I also think that to have that candid conversation, someone has to at least approach the officer and tell me that's right. the way they're feeling about me, because mm-hmm. I wouldn't know it unless right. someone tells me.
And so I feel like in the conversations I've had with both of you, and I realize you are two officers amongst hundreds, mm-hmm. but you both seem very open to having that conversation and to listening. And it seems to be maybe an idea and a value that Colonel Cockrell, you're fostering or trying to foster in your own troopers, correct?
I would say so. I think anytime we are open to the community to have candid conversations, and I don't feel like we're being evasive or anything in our answers. I mean, we're certainly trying to be as direct as we can. And I will say that, you know, police brutality, whatever form, is unacceptable. It doesn't matter if it's in on the Kenai Peninsula or in the Lower 48. It just there's no need for it in this society that we live in. And I think as an agency that we try to follow up. First of all, we try to train our troopers for they don't get to that point. And we screen them carefully, and we certainly don't foster that atmosphere. We don't cover up anything that we think might, you know, that is what we would consider police brutality or anything else. We're just not tolerating of that. Mm-hmm. I think as agencies set those standards, I mean, we can't be 100% sure, because no person's perfect. Doesn't matter how much you screen mm-hmm. them. There's people that make mistakes, and sometimes they make awful mistakes, and mm-hmm. then we need to deal with them immediately and as openly as we can.
All right. We have a caller on the line, Chris from Trappers Creek. Thank you very much for holding.
Welcome. I have just a statement, but maybe it's a small thing, but on the back of the trooper cars, it says loyalty. And it just sets an odd tenor, I think, because loyalty to the law has its own word. I think it's fealty. So I just, like, I don't know. I think it would change the tone a little bit. It sounds like loyalty to each other as troopers, which they need to have, a brotherhood. But what needs to be primary is fealty to the law. And I'll just take the comments off there. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And I guess I would follow up with our core values. Loyalty is to the people of the state of Alaska. It's not to the individual uniform. It's not to the individual, if you want to call it the Brotherhood of the Alaska State Troopers. It's to be loyal to our mission, the people that we serve, and that's what the loyalty part of our core values mean. It's not, again, it's directed towards our service to the people of the state.
All right. We are going to take another quick break, and then we'll be back with more calls on Talk of Alaska. The number is 550-8422 in Anchorage. Statewide, it's 1-888-478-8255. We're talking about community policing in Alaska.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC. If you're looking for business opportunities in the government marketplace, you'll want to know about the Alaska Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Alaska PTAC helps businesses navigate the challenging process of the federal, state, and local government procurement cycles with offices in Anchorage and Fairbanks and delivers services statewide. More information at ptacalaska.org. This message brought to you by Alaska PTAC.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. My name is Ann Hillman. Today we're talking about community policing. And we have one more call on the line. It's Martha from Anchorage. Welcome to the program.
Picked up a little bit late, but I immediately was drawn into the conversation. I was born and raised here in Anchorage, but my suggestions would be for places like Anchorage and also Fairbanks. When one of the speakers was talking about needing a forum, I thought that the idea that I have is not new to me, but it's something that other progressive cities have tried, which is a citizen panel, a citizen review panel with subpoena power for the Anchorage Police Department. We would need an ordinance, and for that we would need someone to write an ordinance and sponsor it. But I think that if we had that, it would be a service to both the community and the police department. So that's what I wanted to suggest, and I'll go off the air from there.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Martha. Lieutenant Rollins, is there an independent review panel or?
As far as the police department?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have, there are citizen groups that provide input to the police department. A command officer sits on the task force, which is a minority task force. And there are other organizations like that where we're invited in to sit on that group. And they obviously have conversation directly with a police commander or someone of that level so that they stay in tune with what's going on in the police world and we stay in tune with what their concerns are. But one of the things you had asked me before, I wanted to just put out there that there are opportunities for the citizens of Anchorage to interact with the police department. We have the Anchorage or the Citizens Academy, the APD Citizens Academy, and the next academy is starting in September.
What is that?
Citizens Academy is a 13-week academy that is held, I believe, every Wednesday, like from 6 to 9 p.m. at our training center on Jewel Lake Road. And the citizens are, usually it's a group of 35. I believe this academy is already full. And we have waiting lists because people are very interested. So what happens is over the 13 weeks, the citizens are introduced to every aspect of Anchorage Police Department. Every unit comes in and speaks to them, either does PowerPoint presentations, hands-on. They go, I believe they take a visit to the crime lab, other different field trips. They do firearms. They're exposed to everything the Anchorage Police Department has to offer. And then they graduate from there, and then they can become the Anchorage Police Department Citizens Academy Alumni Association. And so we have an active alumni association that goes out and does things with the police department and helps us and assists us with different functions that we do. And so there's opportunities all throughout the year. We have the ride-along program when you just have to be 18 years or older. You have to have a clean record because we do a background check. And you sit right next to the officer in their passenger seat and do a whole shift with them. So there's opportunities for citizens to come and learn what the police do. We have coffee with a cop. That happens just tomorrow, actually.
Yeah,
it's at Jitters in Eagle River from 10 o'clock to 11:30, where you can sit down and have a cup of coffee with an officer in a totally relaxed atmosphere and ask them anything you absolutely want to ask. And these are the opportunities that the citizens have. Also, National Night Out is happening in Mountain View at the Boys and Girls Club in Mountain View on the 2nd, I believe it's a Tuesday, and it's from 6 to 9. Officers, that is a community coming together with the Anchorage Police Department to have a national night out where everybody's supposed to close and lock their doors and come out into the streets and have, conversations. And so there's all of that. And then just to give a plug to our Anchorage Police Department, Employees Association, which does an amazing job of contacting the community. If you've ever heard of Trick or Treat Street, you've mm-hmm. heard of Police Navidad. Mm-hmm. Upcoming is the Clothesline Project, which happens at the Northway Mall on Saturday, August 6th, where we collected clothes and we will give them out to people who need clothes, K through 12th grade. The target is for children. Mm-hmm. So we have all of those things that we do, we've done, and we continue to do, and we're continuing to build those relationships with the police department. And so, like you asked me in the beginning, and I kind of stumbled over my words about what this unit is, and basically it's recognized in our department that there's community relations, and we just want to be proactive and reach out further. So we've created a unit to umbrella that effort.
So you're building positive relationships.
Absolutely.
So that we can maintain a healthy relationship between law
Absolutely.
Enforcement and the community. We have time for one last caller. We have Eric from Homer on the line. Oh. We do not have Eric on the line. Well, thank you for calling in, and I apologize for the technical difficulties. Another program that you've been very involved with, Lieutenant Rollins, is the School Resource Officer Program.
Correct.
Tell me why that's so important.
Well, the School Resource Officer, to back up to the beginning of my history, I worked as in Mountain View as part of the Community Action Policing Team. And at that time, we had the opportunity to go into the schools and teach the DARE program, which is teaching kids about not using drugs and mm-hmm. staying away from violence. But that was our only really interaction with the schools at that time. And in 2003, I had the opportunity to be selected for the supervisor position of a eventually 16 officer unit that is housed in the schools. And we are a law enforcement unit inside the schools, but that's not where it stops. We build on relationships with the kids. We broke down the barriers, shattered the barriers and the apprehension between kids. And I think that in all of these issues that we're having, the fact that we already are in the schools and have a positive impact in the school is going to pay dividends in the future for that child who grows up, because they won't have that fear that people talk about of the police. They will already know their school resource officer. And we're mentors, we're coaches, educators, etc.
Well, thank you all very, very much for being here. And thank you for everyone who called in. Today, our guests were Lieutenant Denise Rollins from the Anchorage Police Force, Lieutenant James Cockrell from the Alaska State Troopers, and Jasmine Smith, a community leader here in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for everyone who called in. This has been Talk of Alaska Statewide. I'm Ann Hillman. Have a fantastic rest of your day.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Boating accidents happen even to experienced boaters and even on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make your friends and loved ones promise to always wear a life jacket and carry emergency communication and distress signaling devices. Visit pledgetolive.org, where you can file a float plan, get marine weather forecasts, and download a pre-departure checklist. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.